When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, Bass. Naked Viking fins, surf NVS.
You know what I love the most? In fact, I had a friend of mine over here yesterday checking out my boards, and he saw the sea drives. He goes, oh, and then we were looking at tons of boards, blah, blah, blah. And then the sea drives caught his eye, and he's like, what are those? He had never heard of the sea drives. And I was like, dude, those are my go-to fins for my twin fin. And they're the Sea Drives by Naked Viking fins, NVS fins. And and this was a foil guy. This was like a super rad foil guy. Like he's like the shit you see on Instagram. He's really, really good. So the foil guys are just, I'm not going to say we, because I'm a kook, but I like to consider myself a foil, but they're super dialed in on all the, I mean, the fins and the foils and all of that stuff. So they geek out super hard. And he's a good surfer. He surfs too. He's just like us. You know, he's like, when the waves are good, I surf and I love surfing. But anyway, point is, Naked Viking fins, I love them. I have a drawer filled with them. I've got albums. I've got Taylor Knox's. I've got the Sea Drives. I've got their own designs and many others too. So yeah, I'm a big fan.
I don't know if I told you, but I ordered a John Simon board for El Salvador.
Saw that.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where I saw it, but I told you.
Yeah. So it's a short, like a 6.0 quad kind of, it's not exactly high performance. I mean, it is, but it's like a little fuller volume. Anyways, it's an asymmetrical quad. I'm like, what the heck do I do here? You know? So I'm sure John does have advice, but I did reach out to Naked Viking, to Jamin and Leif, and just explained to them the situation, showed them photos of the board. And so they're like, oh, we got this handled for you. So they call John, work it all through with John. And they're like, it'll take a little bit of time, but we got some prototypes we're going to send him. We're going to get his feedback and we'll get you dialed in. So it's like, that is absolute first class, first rate service.
Yeah. And look, specifically regarding your board, you know, you got to be open-minded about fins and what one person thinks is a good idea could be a great idea, but it could also, because I've told you the story about my asymmetrical Ekstrom, and it had five boxes in it, and I literally had five different fins in it. I've told you this story many times, but and I was one of those guys that I had a box of fins at the beach, and Carl was on the beach, and I would like ride a couple waves, go in, change them out. Carl was so cool. He's like, oh, you're call me when you go surfing. I want to come down and watch and see what happens. You know, so I would call and he'd go to Swami's or whatever. And anyway, it took a while, but I have five different fins. And I mean, I'm talking like, I want to say, I think the little nubster fin in the back was one of the Sean Madison fins. And I might have tweaked it so that the FCS tab fit in the futures box in the back or something. Like I had FCS and futures and different sizes, and Carl's own personal fin that he made is one of them. And you know, it was crazy, but I found the perfect mix.
Well, you found the perfect solution now so that you don't have to do any of that. You could just rely on our boys. And that's the thing. It's a boutique little business between Jamin and Leif, and they'll make you custom fins. They'll make you custom templates. If you're a board builder and you just need a few, they can do that for you. And they're top quality and they're less expensive. So surfnvs.com is their website. Of course, you can also get them at realwatersports.com, where they have everything that you need for any of your water sport needs, including Scott's new obsession with foiling. They have as much foil stuff and gear as they do surf gear. So,
yeah, go there, get your NVS fins or whatever else you need. Real water sports.
As we see some movement at the takeoff zone, it's Kelly Slater grabbing rail. A clean entry, this thing holding open, it spits.
When it spit me, I thought it was going to spit me off my board.
Comes out with the spit, spits him out.
Comes out after the spit,
gets spat out of another good-looking wave here.
Spit, spit, spit.
We're just spitballing, right? Yeah, I got Yeah, guy. It is Tuesday. It's January 16th, David, and we are talking spit. It's the Spit Podcast. David Lee Scales, Scott Bass with you, and we are talking all things surf and surf culture and just, excuse me, stuff that's on my mind and our minds, I should say. And let me tell you, so I watched Stoker Machine, and when you mentioned it last week, I'm like, I wonder if that's about Randy. Randy's a super good friend of mine. Randy
no way. Stoker.
Oh yeah, we go way back. Oh, like we've had adventures like you wouldn't believe. Like stuff that we can't even talk about. You know, let's just say they involved a backpack, you know what I'm saying? And great surf adventures, cuz he was in that sort of 80s 90s kind of like longboard scene that kind of happened here in California for a while, and but we're old buddies and super good guy. One of the greatest guys. I mean, talk about a wonderful human being and a guy that I think, what is his name? Darius Legg that made that movie. Yeah. That was a great film, by the way. I love that film. And, but Randall is a guy that it's almost poetic that they didn't talk to him. It's better that they leave him a mystery. Actually, now that I think about it, like don't do a story on him. But he is just a classic, classic, classic surfer, and lots of people know Ross Stoker. He's a legend.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was expecting them to interview him, and that would be like the final act of the film. But when they didn't, I recognized the movie is about the board itself. You know, Chad ends up becoming one of the characters who's ridden the board over the years that it centers around, but it's really about the board itself. And so kind of just acknowledging Randy and making it kind of a journey to kind of figure out the board's life is the storyline. It's not about Randy. But Darius did say that he and Chad, they had hours of footage together with Randy and Chad meeting and hanging out and stuff like that. And it's all gold. It just wasn't the story that they were telling.
Yeah, anytime you get Randy, he's just a golden surf character. He's just one of these guys that he's just one of the classic characters in surfing that we need and that our culture seems to birth or bubble up, you know, like, and they're just so human, and they're exactly opposite of, you know, oh, what Roxy tee are you wearing? Like, nobody gives a flying fuck.
No.
You know, and yeah. he's just a wonderful guy. Words can't do him justice here. I'm struggling trying to explain to the guy, but he's just a wonderful character. And there are many of those out there, and we all know him. And good stuff. Yeah, the Stoker Machine, by the way, I saw the board and I went, by the way, that experience that Chad had is wonderful. And I've had that experience, and I'm sure you have, and I'm sure many of our listeners have, and I'll just briefly bore you with mine. I was at the Rusty Surf Shop on 15th Street in Del Mar. This was probably 1986 or something like that. And there was an old yellowed Wayne Lynch Evolution surfboard that Terry Goldsmith had shaped. And it was like $100. It was beat to shit, glass and fins. But it has a beautiful outline, very similar to what Stoker's was, like a little wider tail, a little fuller. It's kind of what everyone's riding today. It was totally out of date back then. Like it was just back then it was almost like a round board, but it wasn't. Anyway, I pulled this board off, rode it, loved it, freaked out about it, talked to Rusty about it. You know, it was one of those boards, an old yellow beater that I absolutely was like, this is the best board I've ever ridden. Oh my God.
I had one with an 84 Stewart that I got at a garage sale for $25. And I didn't think about it at the time, but I interviewed Bill Stewart a few months ago. I totally forgot to bring this up with him, but that was like the greatest garage sale find that I've ever had. And then I think I got rid of it somehow. Maybe I just let a friend borrow it and never got it back. And I still regret it. but it was like a, it was 1984. It was a thruster, but it was so much volume that it was real short. Like I didn't need it to be long. It was just, but because it was so short and round, it was just really maneuverable, you know, it's like riding a, like a little disc or something. And I never, it was just like, I would never order a board that size or that style or whatever. It was just because it was $25 at a garage sale. And then the, in the afternoon when the wind turned on and the waves are 3 foot, you know, it's like, oh, I'll just take this little beater out. And I just found myself zinging off sections with tons of speed and pop. And it was like, that was the most fun board ever. I think expectations being very low for it as well allowed me to kind of be open to it. But phenomenal board. And I think the reason maybe why I didn't even stress about telling Bill is every single person who meets him probably is like, hey, I got a Stuart that I loved when I, you know, when I was young. So I just let it go. But yeah, it's a great, those are the best.
And the theme of the movie was one that we should all take to heart, which is grab an old board. I think if you're at one of those surf swaps, which, and this is one of the beautiful things of those surf swaps, you can roam around, you're walking around, there's different boards everywhere. Occasionally your heart and your eye is brought to a board that's kind of beat, but you're like, I like this outline, you know, and it's beat. That's the board you should just give them $25, whatever it is, buy the board and go have a little bit of fun on something outside of the, you know, your normal comfort zone.
Yeah. Well, Stoker's wave, they show him get one wave at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Surf the thing beautifully, like kind of slow to his feet. But then when he gets up, his angle that he takes and just banks beautifully off the bottom, goes up and just cruises down the line. I'm like, man, if you're that age and you can do that, that's all you need to do. And you can get a couple of those a day. You are psyched.
And Darius's film speaks to that. You know, Chad, they do a great job at the beginning of quickly commenting about how important surfing is, just catching a couple of waves, just going out no matter what, especially as you get to be Chad's age, like we're getting, you know, mid 40s, whatever. You just got to get wet, you know? And although it's cliche, they did a good job of just clipping the cliche and making it quick and perfect and succinct and just going, look, just go get wet. You're going to feel better. For whatever reason, that's between you and God and whoever and your wife or whatever, but just go do it, you know, take action. And that Stoker machine, by the way, I didn't, you know, they never hunted down who shaped it. But I saw the Clyde Beatty Jr. glass job, and it, I bet that board was an epoxy because, and that's why it yellowed, but it was still in really good shape. It still had plenty of life in the foam because back then, you know, Clyde was sort of at the forefront of doing those epoxies, and those yellowed. So they look really old, but they're not that old as far as the freshness and the liveliness of the board itself.
Fascinating. Well, the film is on YouTube. I've got it on surfsplendorpodcast.com as well, Stoker Machine. And it's Darius Legg's first film. I mean, he's been working in Hollywood doing various projects, but it's his first film that he's made. And I think it's phenomenal for a first film. It took him 3 years actually to complete it with tracking everybody down. And then also the animation he had to learn from scratch. So
the whole thing is super cool. It's the super, it's a great length. You know, the film itself, Chad, more Chad, Chad's
great.
Wonderfully, there's a real great sense of humility and he's exciting. He's excited to learn, you know, you can tell. And so
he's a boatman in Tavi too.
Oh, is he? Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's cool. I hope to someday meet him. I'm a big fan of everything I just saw and witnessed, and it's cool. Very cool.
Speaking of other legends, I got feedback about Sid Abruzzi last week when I was talking about the wind turbine project off Rhode Island. I referenced that Sid was in a local community activist and had stopped some other development or whatever along Ruggles. And I got a note from a listener correcting some of that, or at least filling in all the details. He said, I grew up in Newport. I've known Sid since we were kids, or since he was a kid. He's a total legend. The first issue with Ruggles was that the city passed an ordinance banning surfing there. Sid let himself get arrested to challenge the ordinance. And then a local lawyer represented him and got the ordinance invalidated. So that was the first thing. Then several years ago, huge winter storms damaged areas of the cliff walk, and engineers proposed building a jetty at Ruggles to fix the retaining walls. It was represented to be temporary, which was total BS, and it would have ruined one of the best right-hand point breaks. Sid led the charge, and the project was stopped dead, and the retaining wall was fixed without effing up the waves. The wind turbine issue is a total nightmare, but somehow the government oversight of this went unnoticed, and the planning is very far along. I was recently contacted by several homeowners who live in the historic Ocean Drive district who may have legal standing to challenge the project. We already have five turbines off Block Island, and half the time I've been out there fishing and surfing, they're not even operating anyways. Mm. So quick details on that, but we'll keep people posted as that story develops and how to get involved.
Yeah, look forward to Sid, you know, continuing the movie. Of course, we can't wait to see the movie.
I have another follow up that I wanted to read to you from Matt Biolis's Instagram account about Surf Expo.
Okay, let me just say before we go there that I spoke with Matt and with Ben from Lost. I was in their booth rapping. And the first thing they said to me was the spiel that you read on Instagram was their spiel at Surf Expo. They immediately went, look at all these old dudes, man. What's wrong with this industry? There's just a bunch of dudes like us. Of course, Matt has a salty gray beard and we're all salty and older. And he's right. You know, like and he pointed out, he goes, think about it. You know, when we started our brand.
Let me read it.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. Yes.
And,
please.
But it fits directly with a lot of the commentary that we've been sharing here for the last couple of years. I think, yeah. I mean, it's really true, but I'll just read it so people can get the.
Yeah. Yeah.
Surf Expo 2020. This is direct from his Instagram caption, quote, Surf Expo 2024. We did our Surf Expo in September 1993. Mike Riola and I built a tiny booth in Trip Freeman's garage in Melbourne Beach. We shared a booth with our friends' skateboard brands. We were 24 years old. We've done this show 1 to 2 times per year ever since, more than 30 years now. It's definitely not what it once was with the sex, drugs, cocktail carts, rowdy rock and roll. But we're all still showing up, showing our latest creations to the best and brightest East Coast retailers. Lots of old friends here, lots of good memories. Unfortunately, there's not much youth to take the torch and run with it. It's rare to see somebody under 40 walking the aisles. When we got going in the early 90s, it seemed like everybody was a startup run by guys in their 20s. Brands like Volcom, Counterculture, World Jungle, Ezekiel, just to name a few. Making it up as we went along. No white beards, no old guard legacy brands like Quicksilver and Billabong Reef. They were all run by, quote, old guys in their 30s, maybe their 40s. Today's, quote, new brands are headed up by guys in their 50s and 60s. It's like we failed to inspire another generation. No wonder there's no rambunctious groms, young pros, or pretty bikini girls running through the aisles anymore. No loud music, no skate ramps, no bricks of firecrackers or surf pool parties with punk rock bands and girls gone wild. Just a bunch of grizzled, seasoned experts doing our best to stay creative and keep this industry alive until some young cocky kids come and kick us out, then take it over. But I'm not holding my breath for that. Anyways, here's our display of gear featuring some new things that are in the works for 2024.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of nailed it, right? I mean, there's a lot of nuance to the reasons behind all of this. You know, it's just different. You know, like society is different.
Unquestionably, I know we can't put our fingers on how we got here, but I'm curious, does that make you, I know that makes us all feel nostalgic probably, but does it make you feel optimistic or pessimistic about the next 10 and 20 years of the industry?
Well, first of all, he's speaking about clothing, you know, the clothing industry. That's what we're talking about here. And we're not talking about the surfboard industry. There's a ton of super red hot young shapers. John Simon being amongst many of these guys, you know.
Jordan Brazzi, who won the event there.
Jordan.
He's not as young as John.
Birch, but I know, but I mean, guys that are even 30 is, yeah. You know, they've been doing it for 10 years. They started when they were 18 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
Michael Arnall.
Ryan Lovelace. Who?
Yeah. Michael Arnall, who won.
Arnall, great example. There, so it's not the surfboard builders that aren't young. It's the specialty retail, quote unquote, surf clothing companies, which they kind of killed themselves. You know, like I spoke about it earlier, you know, the day Quiksilver went public was the beginning of the downward spiral that the individualism of the surf brand. And that's what made Law so great, that they weren't, you know, the ones that weren't were able to go, fuck it. Let's light firecrackers and have shit. And let's do something crazy at our booth at Surf Expo, you know? And I mean, you know, poor Roy Turner would just be like, oh shit, I got to deal with, you know, the guys at Volcom, you know, what's going to happen. You know, I told them no kegs until 4:30, you know, and the Volcom guys would have five kegs in an open bar at noon. And yeah, you know what I mean? Like, and as it was a nightmare for poor Roy, it was also sort of emblematic of how youthful and cool and energetic and engaged and rambunctious and rebellious and silly that our industry could be. And that's all gone. You know, that's just all gone.
Well, and it brought people back to Surf Expo. Surf Expo, as a result of that kind of not volatility, but unpredictability and fun, drew a crowd. And I'll be perfectly honest, that's what drew me into surfing. That was my era. He's talking about 1993. That's right when I was getting interested in surfing. And the whole Lost films and brand identity was a draw for me. And I wasn't doing the things that they were doing. I was much more conservative, but I loved that they were, you'd only heard rumors about it before. You know what I mean? Like, to be able to actually see it in moving pictures on, it was like, they talked this random guy, got him drunk and tried to get him to drop in on a half pipe. Like, what? And he broke his arm as a result. Like, it was insane. Like, I wanted to watch it more. And then you see the personalities like Chris Ward and Corey Lopez and the way that they were surfing as, you know, in concert with their personality type. It was like, oh my gosh, these guys are lighting it up. It was incredible.
And I think if you look at the generations, the young kids were always drawn towards sort of rebellion or rebels. And it goes way back. Like, you know what was rebellious in 1960? Getting on an airplane and traveling around the world with your longboard to chase the endless summer. All of those surfers from the 60s were like, holy shit, I'm drawn to that. That's insane. You mean I don't have to go into my dad's corporate insurance business and I can just jump on a plane and go, you know, like that. And then fast forward to, you know, 74, 75, and guys are like, wow, the Australians and South Africans are kind of being rebellious. I mean, they're getting their ass kicked on the North Shore. Like, shit's happening. Like, there's a sense that there's some drama occurring that's you know, that's emerging something new here, you know? And we've got that sort of busting down the door era. And that was something that myself and my generation was drawn to. And then a few years later, you know, there was more rebellion. And of course, the Lost energy that was the early 90s. Every generation had that kind of rebellion that the 18-year-old looked towards and went, oh, that's pretty friggin' cool, you know? And so I ask you, David, what is that rebellion today? What is it that the 18, the 20-year-old young surfer looks to and goes, I'm drawn towards that rebellion, that difference, that thing that's shattering the paradigm?
I can't think of it. I can't think of any thing that's happening in surfing or a figure in surfing that is going against the grain, doing it that differently to appeal. And the rebellion thing that you're talking about exists across cultures and across time. It's not just surfing. It is at that age, that is what, you know, you want to break out from everything that your parents taught you and go pursue something. So it's inherent in humanity. And so for surfing to not have that figure currently, or I can't think of who it is. I don't know.
Who's the most rebellious creature in surfing?
There isn't one.
Okay, I'm going to throw out some names. And sadly, they're all like my age.
Well, no, and I could think of some that are your age or my age, but, you know, like Dane Reynolds, you know.
He's probably one of the most rebellious ones, and he's kind of quiet, isn't he?
It's a different thing. It's much more conservative than it used to be. But for Dane Reynolds in the moment, he was drawing hand logos of Quiksilver on his board. And that was an act of rebellion. And that was against the contract. literally. Mm-hmm. But they said that people in the company, the corporate people, understood. They're like, oh shoot, this is the rebellion thing. We're going to let this one slide. Nobody else can do it, but Dane can do it. And they made a lot of money off Dane. But the reality is, Dane's 38 years old now. He was at Surf Expo. He was, when Matt was saying the new brands, quote unquote, are still by old guys, that's what he's talking about. It's Dane Reynolds, who's now 38 years old, and he's the youngest guy, you know? Yeah. So I don't know who it is for the 18-year-olds. I cannot, when I think of who the 18-year-olds look up to, again, from my perspective, because I'm definitely not tied in with that group, it looks to be Ben Gravy. It looks to be Jamie O'Brien, you know, and those guys are not, they're not, I mean, Jamie once was, but he's not a rabble rouser anymore. They're kind of straight and narrow, clean, you know?
Yeah. And the thing about back then, like when we think about the surf clothing industry, it was specialty retail. There was more availability for brands like Ezekiel and, you know, some of these other smaller brands that were sort of on the periphery of the big guys. There was more specialty retail. There was more room for those guys to kind of try to claw their way and get some space. And as soon as it all went to Costco and all the big, and you know, guess what? As soon as Quiksilver went to Costco, guess what filled specialty retail? Quiksilver. It's continued to sell there. Like it didn't like clear out, you know, like now you're probably not going to find it. You're going to find, you might find Hurley, you know, which is the next big sellout. Well, but anyway, it's an interesting thing that Matt said. I think it's the beautiful thing about Matt is how he's not going to let his voice be stifled and his opinions are valued. And I'm stoked when he says stuff like that, because at the very least, it gets you and I talking about it. You know, where are the young 18-year-old rebel companies, not rebel surfers? But I just don't think there's room for any companies. Like it's, you know, it's contracted.
Couple of other details. Living near the coast, anywhere near the coast, has gotten so expensive around the world that the young up and coming surfers who have access to the beach and all that sort of stuff, they have family legacy to protect and assets to protect. They cannot be going out there fighting, getting, and, you know, risking all of that stuff. It's just a totally different culture of young people at the beach from even just 20 years ago, where you could just afford a crappy apartment, work as a bartender and surf all the time. And, you know, you had nothing to lose essentially in whatever extracurricular activities you were doing.
Yeah. And you could afford to rent in San Clemente.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't do that.
No, exactly. So I think that is definitely a reflection of the culture that's young. But what the part that we've talked about in the past is that somebody wrote an article, like a scholarly article. And then I think maybe Derek, referenced it on Beach Grit and wrote an article on Beach Grit about it, but it was the average age of a new surfer, or the average age of a surfer now is 45, and even new surfers getting into surfing, they're in their 40s. So I think this is emblematic of an even bigger issue, which is, are young people even getting into surfing, or are they, maybe it's just a generation of screen time, you know, and they're just not going outside, or maybe they're doing some other sport. It just seems like there's less people getting into the bottom of it.
I think you're right. I'm sure that there's truth to that. The thing that's kind of, I think, if you're like a surf industry savior type, I think surf parks offer an opportunity for a younger generation to get into it. Because as you mentioned, real estate around Waco is cheap. Like you could be a Waco, Texas farmer's kid and get into surfing and surf every day. And they probably give you a free pass or whatever. Now, of course, it's not the same and it will never be the same, but
that would be very rebellious. If you are a Texas farmer kid and you're like, Dad, I'm going to the wave pool. He'd be like, no, you're not. Like that's like, no.
Well, the next step in the rebellion regarding the surf industry would be to make a brand, call it Waco for lack of a better phrase, and your advertising campaign is fuck you coastal elites, you know, fuck you guys that live in San Clemente and San Diego, you know.
Yeah,
that would be like, oh, everyone would be against them, of course, you know, like, and then some people like Matt would probably be like, you know what, I kind of like that kid.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It would be, yeah. I mean, the movie that would be made is like North Shore Part Two. Rick Kane grew up in the wave pool. This kid grew up in Waco.
But I think the Waco kid too would be like, I don't even need your North Shore. Screw you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Hit the Maybe end not. Goal, the ultimate scene in the movie is him going to Abu Dhabi to surf Kelly's pool. He works his way.
Kisses in the pool and shit.
He works his way over to Austin to get his feet wet in that one and try out the competition scene. Then works his way to Palm Springs. Then eventually Abu Dhabi is where the grand finale is.
He gets arrested by like the super gnarly kingdom of Abu exactly. Dhabi. That's just like, no, you can't. You know what? That tattoo is way too much. That tattoo on your face, not allowed here. Sorry.
Exactly.
What? I'm here for the championship. I'm the guy.
The name of his clothing brand could be the Branch Davidians.
Oh my God. This is so rebellious. I think we're on to something. I'm ready to buy. You know what I mean? Like, get me a t-shirt. Branch Davidian Surf Team. Branch Davidian Surf Team. I think we need to make a t-shirt. Like, we can go on Custom Ink right now and make a t-shirt that says Branch Davidian Surf Team.
I would definitely pay full attention to what that kid was doing with that brand.
I would too. Yeah, it would be the most refreshing thing. And that's what Matt is speaking to. There's nothing refreshing. It's funny. When I was with Matt, one of the brands that I actually really like is Salty Crew, a very ocean oriented fishing, you know, but guess what? It's guys like me that love that. Like 35 to 55 year old dudes that are like, when I'm not surfing, I'm fishing or what, you know what I mean? And I go, Matt, what about Salty Crew? They're a cool young brand. And Matt points over, he goes, look, yeah, Jared Lane's young relatively, but look at all the guys running his business. They were all bald dudes, like around Jared Lane, you know, and nothing against, I was pointing it out. And
Made Matt's point for him. We just designed a brand for the youth and we're guys in our 40s and 50s.
I know, exactly.
The Branch Davidians was.
But we lived through the original version of it. Like, I mean, we're making Branch Davidian Surf Team t-shirts, like, and only you and I will get the joke that we're being rebellious. Somebody's got to, for God's sakes.
All right. Well, drinkag1.com/surf will get replaced by a Kool-Aid sponsorship.
I'm going to Custom Ink right now to design the shirt.
Do it after the show.
Look like what's
just do it after the show.
Okay. I'm excited. Got some coffee in me. This is where the crazy shit happens.
Well, adjacent to those things, Lost and young people, Chloe and Dino is the new Electric Acid Surfboard Tester. Stab in the Dark.
But I went and looked. It's not up yet.
No, it's tonight, actually, I think. No. Well, today they do the Shapers reveal.
Oh.
And then next. Cool. Yeah, and then on the 23rd is episode one.
Is it at night, like tonight, that we see it, or do we get to see it today sometime? I was hoping to talk about it.
I don't know, but they usually reveal the movie premieres are always at like 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So I don't know when they're dropping the Shaper reveal. But the fact that Chloe Andino is the surfer, I think, is excellent.
Totally agree.
Okay, good. Still at the top of his game in terms of being able to put those boards through their paces. But I also think very articulate.
Yep.
The other interesting thing is I've never seen Chloe ride anything other than a Mayhem.
Yep.
Which is crazy to think about.
Yeah, I see a lot of positives here. Also, according to the previews, the prelims, excellent surf. So it's Chloe and Indo. And Chloe has always, I mean, it's like you just sense sincerity. Like you don't sense that he's ever been gagged. You know what I mean? Like he's just like, dude, this is how I see it. This is how I'm calling it. You know, like I think we're going to get a lot of pure Chloe, which is honesty and sincerity, which is, you know, I mean, not that they all aren't good at it, but it seems like Chloe's naturally that way. And in many ways, the way Taj was.
Well, that's a good comparison. So the thing that I talked about beach communities being so expensive, and if you're raised in that, you're just kind of have a certain conservatism built into you. I think Chloe came from a little bit of that where he is a little bit more, he's just not as rough and abrasive as the other San Clemente surfers that came before him, let's say. But what was worse, or what made that worse, or kind of compounded that problem is, or that conservativeness, is that he was on the CT. And so being on the CT and having all those big sponsor contracts, you kind of have to toe the line and kind of bite your tongue to a certain degree. I think you're right, is that Kolohe has more to say. It was just, he was always speaking through the lens of the WSL's or the ASP's microphone in a post-heat interview. And even when he's done little side projects, he can't deviate too far from his sponsor's brand identities. And so when he does go off the record a little bit, you can see there's a lot of thoughtfulness. There's a lot of critical thinking, and it doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, sensational or scandalous or anything like that. It's just, I want to hear the deeper thoughts, and those platforms never allowed him to have those deeper thoughts or to get to them. And so something like this, I'm all for, because I think that you will see a deeper side of Kolohe than we've seen in the past.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about the How Pro Surfers Get Paid series,
yeah,
I found him to be one of the better guys, because he was just like, I'm not allowed to say it, but I'm going to say it. Like, he would literally say that.
You know? Yeah.
So yeah, we're looking forward to Kolohe. I'm psyched. I'm psyched on Stab in the Dark. It's, you know, I'm psyched on, believe it or not, I'm psyched on high performance shortboards, because it means good waves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Well, while we're on the subject of Stab, we were talking about the popularity contest that they did last week, or that they revealed last week. And we were like, man, this really feels like it's not reflective of the way I see surfing, or, you know, where's Calypti? The film isn't mentioned at all. What are you turning your head?
Well, I agree with you, but when I see the winner, I go, yeah, I agree with the winner. Like,
the winner for sure.
And the rest of them, whatever, you know, like at the end of the day, they got it right.
Well, I got an, email from a listener who's like, dude, think about it. All the films that they had, you know, were in the top, whatever, were all Stab premium projects at some point.
Ah, ha.
So she's like, I wanted to watch Through the Doggy Door, the Sheldon Paizan story, Paishan, West Side, Oahu Kid. And because it had been voted on, it was like number two or number three or whatever, I was eager to watch it. So I went to go watch it, and it was only available on Stab Premium. So I had to go through, I had to sign up for the thing, pay for the, you know, it was, I guess she had a trial, but, and I think it was available wider previous, but then Stab bought the exclusivity to it for a period of time. I think it's going to be on Amazon Prime eventually, is what I heard. Mm-hmm. But even with the Russell Bierke edit that won number one, that was a Stab Premium thing originally for a period of time. So she was just like, look, it's kind of suspect, you know, that something like Calypti, that a lot of us feel was the best film of the year, isn't mentioned anywhere. Like, it's, I think it got one vote from one person. So it's not necessarily that the system is rigged or whatever. It's just that the sample set of people that they're interviewing all have Stab Premium at the very minimum, or have special access, you know, that not everybody else has. So yeah. So that's why.
Yeah. There's probably some, obviously, you know, I don't want to say neither truth nor, I mean, okay. You know, like, here's my comeback to that. Stab Premium's pretty friggin' good, and it's not that expensive. You know what I mean? Like, and it probably helps support at the end of the day, it probably helps support filmmakers on some level, you know, but you're right. Like, where was, I don't know. I was going to say, where were the Torrin Martin films? We can watch the Torrin Martin films, but were they on the list? No. You mentioned last week they weren't anywhere to be found.
There was one vote, I think, for Calypti. But I think the takeaway here is just, as we're assessing Stab and kind of what they represent and who they're representing it to, I think we're seeing a certain pigeonholing of themselves into creating a certain kind of content for a certain type of people. And you don't...
Well, there's no doubt. It's funny. I was thinking earlier today, I was like, you know what needs to happen, or would be a possible fun business, is a website and or / social media thing, but I, for sure, a website, a distribution point for not just all things surf, but all things ocean. Because you mentioned the demographic of the surfer these days. They're like 40 years old, and they mountain bike, and they do yoga, and they do all sorts of shit. If there was a distribution point, like, let's just call it the ocean, for lack of a better phrase, and it had surfing, and it had paddling, and it had foiling, and it just had everything that had to do with the ocean, you know, like maybe some environmental causes. And it was just a distribution point. It was kind of like you know, like basically you would just coalesce shit from the internet and put it up on the page, and you just rip shit off and put it up on, like they do at Surfer or wherever. You know, you just grab stuff and put it up and type a paragraph about it, you know, and there you go. There's your, but it was, but the ones we have now are all surf. There's not one that's like, you know, on the same page, you could see five different fun things that are ocean oriented.
Yeah. Get on that.
Dude, too busy surfing.
Waterwaystravel.com. They are getting us to El Salvador in April. The trip is fully booked, but guess what? They can get you wherever you want to go in the world, any time of year, whatever level of luxury you need, and whatever level of surf proficiency you have.
Yeah, I always say, you know, where you can't go wrong is using experts in the field. If you're getting a hip replacement, go to an expert. If you're going on a surf trip, go to the expert. Waterways Travel. These folks, Sean Murphy and his crew, these are the experts.
This is their 30th anniversary. So they're celebrating that this year. That's how you know they're experts, is they've been doing it for 30 years. That's indicator.
That's an indicator. Check the check. All right, waterwaystravel.com.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, speaking of old dudes, Benji Weatherly has a podcast called Let's Potty, and he had Kelly Slater on last week. And Kelly revealed some interesting insights into the Kelly world of Kelly. He had major hip surgery.
Hip replacement.
It was, they shaved the ball, like, of the femur, I guess, that goes in. He had labrum surgery. They replaced the labrum. I forget what else.
Shaved the ball, but did they put something on the ball after they shaved it? Because that's what hip replacement is.
Go ask or go listen to it. I'm not fully.
So we had old man stuff. It's like, hey, what are your injuries and how did you sleep last night?
Yeah, exactly. So that's in between seasons. So that'll kind of be interesting to see how that plays out for him into this season. Just, he'd been dealing with that pain for a long time. So you could argue that he'll be in better shape going into this next season, but you could also argue, you know, things are never the same after a surgery. He was also planning to retire when he won Pipe 2 years ago. So when, I don't know if you remember this. Remember that big win that he had?
Yeah, I do, of course. But I'm questioning.
Our predictions, yeah. I remember saying leading into that, maybe we had a conversation mid contest, and I was like, dude, if Kelly wins this, he's turning 50 next week. Like, that's where you drop the mic and just walk out. Like, that is, I would bet money on the fact that Kelly's going to retire on the stage after the win.
Yeah.
He admitted in this podcast he was planning to. He's like, I just felt like that was the ultimate win in my life and I could do no better. But when I was on stage, crying and processing, you know, it's just the words didn't come out. And then as I processed after the fact, it was like, I'm not ready to retire. So I think that's kind of interesting.
What's weird is like retiring. Is it retiring if you get wild cards to the pipe for the next 5 years into Chopu?
Not really. No.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to walk away.
And frankly, I still have hopes that he's going to win gold in the Olympics.
Yeah. He seems torn about it. Like he did reveal unintentionally, I think, about it doesn't provide the same passion or drive. He doesn't feel the same passion or drive for the competition element as he used to. He said that morning of the interview, he was watching the Pipe Masters and he had zero like jealousy of fear of missing out. You know, he's like, I'm watching the event and I could just think about, it doesn't really bring me anything anymore. Like the things that are fun in surfing to me have nothing to do with what those guys are doing right now wearing the jersey. So him revealing that, I was like, ooh, that's kind of a little clue as to where his headspace is at in 2024. However, he didn't say he's retiring. And he also, you know, he didn't say what his other plans are, that he had some ambition and drive and passion to go do something else. So I feel like he's got kind of one foot in and one foot out at the moment. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he does some events this season and some not, and then next year fewer, you know, just the best events, and then the next year just pipe and just Chopu, and it slowly kind of tapers off.
Yeah, I guess more will be revealed. I often look to the boards that he's designing for Firewire to get a sense of where his head's at, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's riding, he's like fired up on twin fins, and he's fired up on stuff that you wouldn't ride in a CT competition. You're not allowed to, which speaks volumes.
It's a great point.
And, you know, I could almost see, he's such a competitive guy, and I'm just riffing with you. I don't know Kelly. I met him once. You could see him going, you know what? Let's try some fishes out, you know, and just going to Firewire and going, I want to do a fish. And they're like, wait, we got the fish market kind of dialed in over here with these other guys. You know, I don't care. I've been, you know, who knows? But I mean, you know, the world's his oyster.
We would know a lot more about him and his intentions if Benji Weatherly would let him finish a sentence on that podcast.
Benji's like me. He just interrupts. He's got too much coffee in him.
It's way worse than you. It's like crazy town. Kelly, I mean, no less than three times had to say, hold on, let me just finish this story to Benji. And Kelly's on a roll. Kelly's telling like really great stories that you want to hear more of. And Benji's like fully interrupting him with some stupid, inane comment, you know? And it's like, Benji, shut up. And Kelly literally had to say, hey, let me finish this thought. It was crazy.
Yeah, that's something that is hard to overcome. Go ahead.
The funny thing is Benji's hilarious. Like Benji could just do an hour monologue and it would be gold. I like Benji a lot.
Yeah.
But goodness gracious, recognize your role in that show, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, what else you got? I got a few silly things.
Well, I was going to say, as it relates to the Vans Pipe Masters that Kelly was talking about, there is an update on Emio Sursmak wipeout.
Yes.
And it's really it's really horrific, actually.
It is.
This is like, he literally is, the doctor said he may not walk again. And Emio is, I think he's 20 years old. He's from Tahiti. He is the charger at Chopu. Like, he's gotten some of the best waves out at Chopu in the last couple of years. We've talked about him on the show that when those waves went down, he is an unbelievably talented kid. And it's crazy to think that a wipeout during a surf contest can lead to a total, you know, to this, essentially. It's life-threatening. It's a life-threatening wave. His life is not threatened at this point, but again, he may not walk again, and his career is certainly threatened. But the scary part about this is he did not have travel insurance. And he thought that, quote, thought, he says that he thought he'd just be covered through the contest policy. I don't know if he actually looked into that and misunderstood the policy, but he is not covered. And he says, quote, I was taken by ambulance to the ICU at the local hospital where they performed various procedures. And although I told them I did not have health insurance, they required me to stay overnight, which cost me $37,000. After that, I couldn't feel or move my legs for a week and a half. And still to this day, I'm dealing with the effects of the injury and concussion, which has resulted in depression. I've never been one to ask people for money or help, but this situation unfolded without my control and has put me and my surfing career in a very difficult position. The combination of the ambulance ride, hospital stay, MRI, and other tests ended up costing me $55,000. If I'm unable to pay back the hospital bills, I won't be allowed to return to the United States or surf in Hawaii again, since I'm from Tahiti, French Polynesia. This is heartbreaking for me because Hawaii is like a second home to me and has always played a huge role in my growing my career because of the major contests. I've been able to compete there. If I'm unable to return to Hawaii, it'll have a huge negative impact on my surfing career.
As you read that, I just thought to myself, is that true? Like, if you owe money to a hospital, they don't let you into the United States? There's a red flag that goes up with your visa? I find that hard to believe, but I don't know. I'm not an expert. It sounds like he knows what he's doing, but it's super sad. MEO has received, perhaps, you know, caught and ridden one of the greatest waves at Chopu ever. I mean, there's one that's just, I mean, the thing is about Chopu, they're all so mind-blowing. It's hard to categorize them and put them in some sort of prioritized list. But yeah, this is sad, you know. And it's, you know, health costs shouldn't ruin your life, you know. Yeah. But maybe they do. I don't know. You know, even if you have insurance, we're all one horrible accident away from bankruptcy.
It's wild.
It's just the bottom line. That's the truth. Now
in America,
Yeah. Now I think back and I think, okay, what about, you know, 100 years ago, 1924, if you had a crazy accident, you might not go bankrupt, but you probably wouldn't get any kind of medical care. You'd get the same medical care you would get now if you had no money, which is none. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it costs money, but the exorbitant costs, it's absolutely insane. Like what he went through and the hard costs to provide what, you know, the care that he got would have cost, let's say, $12,000 in a fair market system, you know, rather than $55,000. I'm just guessing, but it's out of control. And 55, to be honest, sounds low to me. Like it if does. He spent a week and a half in a hospital, I'm like, dude, 55. You got a deal.
155.
Exactly. Yeah. But so look, the economics of it aside.
Yeah. And well, by the way, let me say this. David and I aren't experts in health insurance or the medical industry and how it all works. But I think in my heart, I can't speak for you. It seems wrong.
It's entirely broken. The system is broken. You don't have to be an expert to know it. Everybody knows it. I have friends who are going to become doctors who simply did not become a doctor because the whole system's broken and they're not going to make any money at it. You know, like you, anyways, have travel insurance. First of all, that would be PSA number one here is certainly if you're just going to go surf on a surf trip somewhere in a third world country or elsewhere, but especially if you're going to go surf one of the most harrowing waves on the planet where you could die. Absolutely. You should. And especially if surfing's your career, like having travel insurance would be a basic thing that you want to implement. But aside from the economics of it, it is super sad and scary. We've been reminded 5 times now at Pipeline this season, within the first month of the year, that the best surfers in the world are not immune to a life-changing injury. And we talked about Kai Lenny's helmet last week. Helmets might be an important way forward for everybody at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think about some sports leagues, and I don't know the ins and outs of the human resources department behind some of these or the policies that they have with their athletes. But it would seem like you would offer, if you were a professional league or association, that you would offer some sort of health insurance opportunity for your athletes. Like, or vest them. Like if you're on tour for 5 years, you now get health insurance for the rest of your life. If you, or, you know, I don't know what it is, but it, I'm sure that there are leagues that do that, that are like, hey man, yeah. You know, you've put in your time, you are now vested into our system.
Yeah. Yeah. It just seems like the responsible thing to do. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of wild. And I don't know what the WSL, maybe the WSL does have something similar to that, but the Vans event is kind of a one-off. So anyways, hearts and prayers out to MEO. There is a GoFundMe. I'll link it on today's show notes. If you want to contribute to that, I feel like 55,000 is a number that he can get to.
Yeah, for sure. But if you got some extra $20, $100, $200, you know,
yeah.
Do the right thing here if you can do it.
And then scary to think about the repercussions of his health and well-being moving forward, but we'll keep tabs on that as well.
Yeah.
Will Scott, my must-see moment is Channel Islands Field Notes. Stumbled across this the other day on YouTube. They posted kind of a long extended version of that swell that hit about 2 weeks ago, the kind of shoulder swell coming leading up to it, and then the main part of the swell and then coming off of it. And they had a bunch of team riders in town. Michael February, of course, Dane Reynolds lives there. Dane Gadowskis lives there. And they were kind of putting boards through their paces, pulling boards out of the rafters. They got Michael February to ride an old board that Al Merrick had actually shaped for Tom Curran. And then Tom, just for whatever reason, never picked it up, never surfed it. So it was never before ridden, but it was 20 years old plus. And Michael February rode that. Britt Merrick's doing a lot of surfing, looks more fit than ever, actually. And so seeing Britt kind of get out there and test out the boards with the guys, it was just a cool, like, 12-minute, 15-minute little documentary of Rincon, essentially, and the team riders and the boards. And I loved it. I love seeing surfboards and kind of the development of the designs. And that's what the video was.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. And you know who else rips is the that Australian guy that runs the team for Channel Islands. What's his name? Do you remember his name by chance? Anyway, he's
is like, it Brent?
It might be.
Brent Powers?
Brent. I think it is Brent. Anyway, that guy rips. And there, more of him would have been good too. But there's, yeah, it was a lot of fun watching those guys. And sort of a day in the life, you know, and down at the con. Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Must-see moment presented by Trees Wax, by the way. I forgot to say that, but Trees Wax is petroleum-free surf wax.
You could probably find Randy Rostoker down there in the pit at Rincon a few years ago.
Yeah.
With the crew. He's part of them. He's like one of those guys that's a part of every hardcore crew. Like, he could go to New Break and fit in. He could go to the pit at Rincon and fit in. He could go to the bay at Hanalei, fit in. He knows everybody everywhere.
Yeah.
My must-see moment is something that happened during the big swell after Christmas, but they just posted it. I saw it on Surfer Magazine, and it's Eric Nelson's Power Lines Production. Eric Nelson, he's been surfing Mavs for 30 years, it seems like. He interviewed Maverick surfer Michael Joshua, and Michael paddled out on that big day, December 28th, biggest day in many years, according to most, and he caught one of the biggest bombs ever. He didn't have a tow team, didn't have a board. He's just like, I'm just going to go out there. He's a local guy. I think Peter Mel asked Nick Von Rupp to give him a tow, and Nick pulled up on a ski and goes, hey, you want to go? I'll tow you into a few. And he's like, yeah. He grabbed a board he'd never ridden, jumped on a ski with a driver he'd never driven with before. Nick Von Rupp put him into a few, three or four really good ones, but one was the bomb of the day. It's a mental wave, and it's just one of those great stories, kind of, you know, like the Stoker Machine movie, where it's like, these are the guys that we need to celebrate, these are the guys that are you know, the true fabric of our culture. And so hats off to Michael Joshua for bomb of the day on the swell of the year, and for Eric Nelson for doing the backstory behind it and interviewing him after the thing. And you can find it all, Power Lines Productions YouTube page or surfer.com.
Okay, sweet. I'll post it too.
By the way, must-see moment brought to you by Trees Wax.
That's right. Thank you, Trees Wax. Treeswax.com. Yeah, I will find that and post it as well with today's show notes. But yeah, I mean, how crazy is that? That of that historic swell, we talked about Skip McCullough last week, who's a contractor, not a professional surfer. We talked, and then you're talking about him at Mavericks, not a professional surfer. And they're out there in the lineup with hordes of professional surfers, and they're the ones getting the waves of the day on the swell of the decade.
Yeah. Mike and Joshua, check it out. It's good
stuff. Bravo. Kudos to you guys.
Absolutely. All right. Well, look, David, great show. Until next week, adios and aloha.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Cold or chrome, they give us those nice bright colors, give us the greens of summers, makes you think all the world's a sunny day. Oh yeah, I got an iPhone camera, I love to take a photograph, so mama don't looks worse in black and white. Kodachrome.